saved hundreds a month. And overall, I just think it's a better choice of a healthcare program for me. I'm really happy with it. And honestly, normally, I don't even like talking about this stuff.
Nobody does.
But MediShare is different. MediShare members share each other's healthcare bills. We pray for each other. It's a not-for-profit, so we all save money.
True. Tell them about the thing.
What thing?
The online thing.
Oh, yeah. I used that the other night. MediShare members can now access a doctor online 24/7. You can get a prescription for the flu or something just that fast.
So MediShare can save you hundreds a month. You get to be part of the community. You get a huge network of doctors and providers to choose from.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
The final verdict from Jerry. So call 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE. 833-39-BIBLE.
The NTSB is investigating a helicopter that went down in Manhattan's East River yesterday, killing five passengers. Now, the pilot is heard on a radio transmission saying, "Mayday, Mayday," and they believe he had an engine failure. NYPD's Daniel Negro has more from the scene.
There were six people on the helicopter. The pilot freed himself. The other five did not. So police and fire divers entered the water and removed the other five.
A big race is happening tomorrow for a congressional seat in Pennsylvania. USA Radio Network's Wendy King explains.
Just after President Trump campaigned for Republican congressional candidate Rick Saccone, Democratic rival Connor Lamb was recruiting votes in Pennsylvania's coal country.
I'm proud to support the American Miners Pension Act because I believe that we have to keep our promises as a people.
The special election on Tuesday is seen as a key test of support for the president ahead of November's midterm elections.
This is USA Radio News.
At Robert Half, we know finding the right employees is a job in itself, and it's a job we love. You see, Robert Half isn't just a staffing firm. We're people. People who believe in finding the right people to fit your company's needs. Because employees who are a good fit are more productive, more engaged. Finding a great candidate isn't easy. But at Robert Half, we know it's possible. Robert Half, the experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
Police in Austin, Texas are investigating two separate package explosions that left at least one teenager dead and three others injured. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
This morning's package explosions occurred about 5 hours apart in two East Austin neighborhoods. The first explosion left a 17-year-old man dead and a woman rushed to the hospital with life-threatening injuries. Interim Austin Police Chief Brian Manley spoke to the media shortly after the first explosion.
We still are trying to work to understand what happened, what the device was, and where it came from.
Another package explosion was reported shortly before noon that sent an elderly woman to the hospital. I'm John Clemens.
A study finds most American women near retirement age haven't saved enough. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has more on the story.
Research from George Washington University finds women are more financially at risk today than they were a generation ago. The reasons? High levels of debt and low savings levels. Transamerica says the median retirement savings balance among working women is $34,000. They say many women approaching retirement don't have that much or anywhere near as much of a nest egg as they'll need. What can be done if you're near retirement and you're a woman? Well, the experts say you might have to work past retirement. In the meantime, also lower your living costs and boost your savings.
And finally, the Monday after daylight savings time begins is officially known as National Napping Day. For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
And we're live here at Hot and 100, and I'm your host, Georgine Trinkle. My guest found his way into the studio, so we're going to be talking about some interesting things today. We already had some questions on our Facebook feed, so I know everyone wants the weather. I want the weather, too. We'll do a commercial break, and then we'll be back here in the studio.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and 100 in every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and 100 in provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
And we're back here in the studio. And you want to know the weather. I want to know the weather, too, because it feels like snow, and it looks like snow. What's the expression? If it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. Well, that might be the case today. So this is what we have going on. We have a hazardous weather condition, and you all know how much I love those, but it is 42 degrees out today. And our winter weather advisory is in effect starting at 8 p.m. So what does that mean for us? It means that we have a good chance of some snow this evening, but it's looking like it is not going to be at 7 p.m. as originally forecasted, but the snow and rain mix is going to start before 11 p.m., and then we're going to switch over to snow. Our temperatures are going to be around 31 degrees, so it was quite warm today, and the sun was out yesterday. So I'm hoping when it starts to snow, our snow accumulations will be low. Right now, we're looking at 1 to 2 inches possible, and you know that's not very much at all. Tomorrow, we have some snow mixing with rain after 1 p.m. and then gradually ending in a high near 41. So looks like tomorrow the snow will be out of here after a messy morning commute. And then Tuesday night, we have a low around 25. Wednesday, we have some snow showers, but the temperature Wednesday is 41. And all week, we're just in the 40s. And that is below the average temperature for this time of year. And everyone is excited about snow. No one, right? Absolutely no one is excited about snow. Everyone is excited about spring. Could start to see the daffodils coming up and the hyacinths, and they don't know what to do. We had that beautiful few warm weather days, and now we're back to snow and cold. But I'm happy to say most of Hunterdon County, I believe, is fully restored with the power. So we're going to celebrate that and hope that the snow tonight is going to be just a minor inconvenience and it won't stick. We'll do a commercial break, and then we'll be back here in the studio.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
All right, so here we are kicking off our show. It's actually our first show in March because last week I was dealing with the leftover residual effect of way too much snow the prior week. So I'm happy to say I have email and phone and electricity and life is good. So this is our first show of March, and we're talking about Title V today. And first, we always start with a quote. So our quote today is about democracy, but it is by someone who is not a politician, George Bernard Shaw. And his quote is this: democracy is a device that ensures we shall be governed no better than we deserve. So that is our quote of the day. And I'm happy to kick off our show today with Dan Gilligan, who is the state director for the conventions of state. So Dan is here in the studio, and he is going to be telling us a little bit about what the convention of states actually stands for, what it represents, and how he, as the state director, is moving things along in New Jersey. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, Georgie. It's great to see you.
Thank you so much for finding our new building. You can see we're in the beautiful historic building here.
Yeah, it's a big upgrade.
It really is. I don't know if I deserve it. I'm going to take it if I deserve it or not. It is beautiful to be in downtown Flemington, and I appreciate you coming to be in person. It's always much nicer for me when I can see my guest,
yeah.
And it works better for the show. So thanks for making the trek over, and I got to show off our beautiful building. I don't have a fire for you, Dan, and if I was a little more technically savvy, I would be doing a live feed. However, we're going to just stick with the podcast for today.
I'm grateful for the level that we're at, Georgie. I'm a little Fred Flintstone with that stuff myself, so I completely understand. I could make a fire, though, if you wanted to.
I've had enough fire. Enough fire and no heat. So we'll just pretend that we we have a fire going, but we do have a beautiful room here to welcome you as the state director. And I know that you were on the ground floor for New Jersey's efforts in the Convention of States. So let's just kick it right off and tell us what you've been up to.
Okay. Yeah, well, I continue to work with the Convention of States project in New Jersey. And like all of us in New Jersey, I'm a volunteer. So the Convention of States is really a way in which regular citizens, people like us, can work together and work with their state legislators and through their state legislature and actually have a very significant effect at the federal level. So I'm involved because, like a lot of people, you look at the activity that takes place at the federal level as far as the activities of our federal government, power, jurisdictional issues, spending issues, and you say, geez, you know, what is it that's going to happen that will do something about the trajectory that we seem to be on? And as a frustrated voter and a guy who tried to keep up with the news, I found nothing until coming across this Convention of States project, which was a couple of years ago now since I had gotten involved, which is actually something that not only has the ability to kind of reset, make correction, or provide some balance at the federal level, but is expected to, was intended to. You mentioned Title V, and actually it's Article V, which is what we the basis for this project. It's part of the Constitution. So, you know, we really know that we're very legitimate in our activities because we're kind of just simply following what is supposed to happen in the Constitution.
I know what people always ask, and this is before I even get to the Facebook questions that we have posed.
Go ahead. Let's start with the hardest questions first, please.
Oh, you want the hardest ones first?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. If we're going to end early, let's do it, okay?
No one has enough faith, I swear. And we're not going anywhere, just so you know.
Okay.
Just so you know, we're not going anywhere. We are here, and we are here to stay for the full hour. All right, so here, let me find our questions here. All right, so one question is, let's see, the Articles of Confederation, someone thinks it was a failure to unite the country after the Revolutionary War, and it led to the Constitutional Congress and the writing of our Constitution. So are we really, will this mean that we would be prepared to dismantle the rules that hold the U.S. together, mainly the Constitutional Congress?
Yeah. I've heard that argument kind of posited before, and the basis of that question indicates that people think at times that if we were to have a convention of states, that we, in effect, open up the Constitution to being rewritten and are effectively, a constitutional convention. And, I could get into the more, the more scholarly aspects of this. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I hang around with a lot of guys who know what they're talking about. I would refer the individual to Rob Nadelson, who is the foremost Article V scholar, constitutional scholar in the country, and who went at this kind of thinking that that position had some basis for which to be concerned, and he determined that it really didn't. It is a completely different animal than what it is that we're trying to do. We, as articulated in Article 5, are looking to go forward with a convention that can only deal with certain limited topics. We are in no way looking to make to rewrite the Constitution of the United States. In fact, people in our project consider that to be the framework for the arguably the greatest society that's existed on the face of the planet, and that Constitution worked pretty good for a couple hundred years in which we followed it. What is included in that document, and ironically to the individual's question, which is what we want to use in the Constitution, is a mechanism for the states to act as a check to the federal government. And the reason it's there is because there is supposed to be, we all remember from, fifth grade history, U.S. civics classes, that there's supposed to be, and there kind of is, some type of a balance or tension, check and balance between the three branches of the federal government, between the judiciary and the Congress and the executive. What we didn't really learn about for some reason is that there is supposed to be that same dynamic between the states and the federal government. So that's what we're using. We are that check. And when you look and you realize that that check has never been used, well, if you were to say to the guys who wrote the Constitution, hey, you know, it's been a couple hundred years and that the federal government's never really been checked by the states, they would probably look at you and say, are you kidding me? You didn't use this every 20, 30, 50 years? I wonder what kind of shape you guys are in. And when you look at the $20 trillion and the $150 trillion in unfunded and the 400 federal agencies, you know, it's really difficult to argue that the federal government is not doing a lot more than it was ever expected or intended to do or than it can possibly do well. So we look at the federal government and at those types of difficulties that it's having, and we recognize that at this point the federal government is structurally incapable of really addressing those things. And those things are very disconcerting. You know, I don't really know what $1 trillion is, but I do know what financial ratios are. I'm a little bit of a finance guy, and I can figure that stuff out. And you just look at this and you say, you know, where's this going? This can't have a good ending. This is national security issues and, you know, potentially lifestyle-changing issues, if not for us, for people younger than us. So I'm really very honored and excited to be part of, you know, the Convention of States project, which we see as the only legitimate means by which we can actually do something to really help our country.
Well, I know one question people always want to know, and this is any unelected official always asks, what about term limits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, unelected officials happen to seem to love term limits. We have three application items that we would like to take up at a convention of states. And these are uniform throughout the country. And at this point, 12 states have passed our resolution. We have over 3 million supporters around the country. We're really gaining in popularity. And before I forget to mention my commercial, Georgine, if I may, Senator Tom Coburn will be in Philadelphia with us on March 22nd, having a town hall meeting. The senator left the Senate after recognizing that, you know, he couldn't and that the Congress couldn't fix itself, basically. And he is a senior advisor to our project. Now, as far as our, let me get back to our three application items, because one of them is the consideration of term limits. The first one is that we want the states to get together to have a meeting at which they discuss potential ways in which we can restrict federal spending. The same for federal power and jurisdiction. And then the third for term limits. Now, personally, I like the first two a lot. I'm not so much a term limits guy. Because I think that if we advocate for term limits and we accept term limits, we've kind of recognized that the system is broken, and we're not really fixing the system, but we're kind of band-aiding it with term limits. There is the notion that, hey, elections are term limits, and I agree with that. And in an idealistic world, if everything worked right, you're exactly correct. But that notion also kind of assumes that you have a reasonably well-educated populace, and that you have a system that's not corrupt. And I'm not sure we have either of those things. So there are people who think that, you know, term limits are a good idea. And it is, you know, in fact, one of our platform items. I'm here. I'm with the Convention of States because of the first two. But certain people are very attracted to the term limits thing. I will tell you that, you know, once we have a Convention of States, we are only limited to talking about those three application items. The actual work product that comes out of a convention of states can deal with any of those three or one of those three, or if they actually get nothing done, it will deal with none of those three. As far as term limits go, I will mention we had a co-sponsor, and we were in the New Jersey legislature, and he said kind of what I was saying. He said, you know what, I like the first two application items, but I don't really advocate for term limits because I recognize institutional knowledge and experience and that kind of thing. And I said, well, why don't you come with us, you know, support us, and then we'll send you as a delegate representing New Jersey, a commissioner to the Convention of States, And you can tell us why there shouldn't be term limits, you know? So we're just saying that these things need to be talked about and addressed. And we don't see any other means by which it can be done besides through a convention of states.
We're going to take a quick commercial break here, and then we're going to be back to explore this a little bit further and find out what's happening in New Jersey, who's supporting this in New Jersey and elsewhere. Stay with us.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. And we're back here at Hot and Hunterdon with my guest today, Dan Gilligan, the State Director for the Convention of States, who is talking to us about some different things that are going on. And we were just going to delve right into New Jersey. So, Dan, maybe you could give us an update of what's going on here in New Jersey.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, you know, the whole idea of what we're doing as volunteers, and I've worked with numerous volunteer organizations, and I've been a board member on different, whether it's a municipal board or a foundation board or a local nonprofit board. What we're doing here is different. You know, because I believe that it really has such a significant impact and can really affect a lot of people across the country in a very positive way. So what our role in New Jersey is really just to build up our grassroots supporters. And we've been doing a reasonably good job of that. We have a very good volunteer team, and I'm part of the leadership of that team, and we have people like Bill Truax, who lead our legislative team down in Trenton, and Rodica, who handles our all of our computer database stuff, Gary, who handles media. I'm certainly not going to mention everybody, but because we have over 1,000 volunteers in New Jersey, we have over 17,000 supporters in New Jersey. And what all of these people are interested in is they're interested in forwarding a convention of states as a means of self-governance, as a means of being able to make greater local decisions, and as a means of being able to make, you know, these corrections that we need to do at the federal level. So the nuts and bolts of that are that we have to have our legislature in New Jersey agree, along with two-thirds of other legislatures across the country, that they think that having a convention of states at which our three application items will be addressed is a good idea. So what we're doing is we're growing that grassroots in order to have people aware of this project by which they can really address a lot of the things that frustrate a great many people. And as part of that, we also seek to work with our legislators in gaining their support so that the resolution does, in fact, get passed in New Jersey.
And what would be the steps if the resolution were to be passed?
Well, the Constitution of the United States is a wonderfully cogent document, and Article 5 provides for means by which the Constitution can be amended. And that is actually what we're talking about doing here. And I know some people will say, wow, you know, that sounds kind of out there, you know, amending the Constitution. That doesn't happen too often. And we agree. You know, it is something of a radical notion, but, you know, we do have really rather radical problems. So you don't come at a big problem with a small solution. And I'll also mention that the founding of the country was kind of radical. And what is really not radical about this, though, is the legitimacy by which we're simply following the Constitution. We just kind of open that recipe book and, you know, said, here's how to make the Article 5 cake. So we're just going about doing that. So those amendments need to be based in one of those three application items. And, you know, one of the things that people like about the way that we've approached this, and we're certainly not the first ones to attempt to do this. It's never been done. There have been over 400 times in this country where groups like ours have organized and attempted to do this Article 5 process. But, you know, part of the reason why we're remarkably popular and growing is because we haven't come at this and said, look, these are our solutions. Just balance the budget or, make spending X percent of whatever, you know. We've just said, we think we should look at these problems. We think we should look at the problem of federal spending, power and jurisdiction, and consideration of term limits. So the nuts and bolts of that, according to Article 5, are that two-thirds of the states have to agree that, yeah, you know, we want to do this. So right now, we've been at this for, I guess it's about 4 years. We have a national staff that directs us. We have people like us in all 50 states. And after, you know, two-thirds of the states agree to have this meeting, because that's really all that we're doing at the time that the 34 states, two-thirds, all pass their resolutions, we've really done nothing. We've created something very, very big and strong at a grassroots level. We've made people aware of solutions, but we've really not changed anything. The potential for change comes when that meeting takes place, and then they consider amendments to the Constitution based on those three application items. And whatever comes out of that, you know, whatever it is that they may be able to agree to, if anything, then doesn't just go back out to those 34 states. It actually has to go out and get ratified by 38 states. So it's two-thirds in and 34 out. And once you've done that, then, you know, you've made those changes that we think will eventually move to address one or all three of those application items and help the country.
And Dan, why do you think it failed in the past?
Well, we didn't have strong people in the media like Georgine Trinkle promoting us and allowing us time on the air to talk about it. So really, that's reason number one. actually, Georgine, you know, when you think about it, when the Constitution was written and you had a handful of states up on the East Coast, everybody could ride a horse to Philadelphia. It seemed like something that was doable. But I think as the country grew, it's really, really difficult to get 34 states, you know, to formally pass this legislation in a uniform way. So I think that, you know, really just technology has a lot to do about that. When people come into our website, you know, we have the webinars running and the this training and the that, and you get connected with people right away. So, you know, technology has really, I think, allowed us to mobilize in an effective way. I also think that we have the right message. You know, as I mentioned, we're not coming at this saying, you know what, because we're the smartest guys that you've ever met, we know the answer. All that we've done is identify the problems, which are, you know, remarkably obvious, and it's really difficult to take a position against our application items that something doesn't need to be done here. And, you know, the timing of it is that you have great frustration in the country. And that's whether you're a Donald Trump or a Bernie Sanders guy. You know, you just look at the federal government and you say, this really isn't working very well, and I'm a little bit concerned about it. What can I do? And when people learn, well, if you just kind of read the Constitution, it's only like 10 pages, 12 pages. You know, if you read this part, there's, you know, what, 8 articles in the Constitution? And, you know, one of them is where they all sign it. We're supposed to be doing this. Nobody's ever done it. You know, that's part of the reason why we have these difficulties. So for all those reasons, I think that's why we're really realizing success.
All right, we're going to do a commercial break, and then I have a few questions when we come back. So stay with us. We will be back.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
USA Radio News.
Right now, the president's primary focus is on pushing through things that we know have broad bipartisan support or things that we can do from an administrative perspective that we can do immediately.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders earlier today, when discussing at the daily press briefing what can be done to keep our children safe at school, much of the briefing did revolve around the president acting on raising the age to buy certain guns from 18 to 21. Elsewhere today, President Donald Trump welcomed the 2017 World Series champion Houston Astros to the White House. The president praised members of the team for going down to Puerto Rico right after Hurricane Maria.
When Maria ravaged Puerto Rico weeks later, the Houston Astros redoubled their assistance, and many of them went there and helped. Really great.
You can always find us online at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, I'm Brant. Maybe you've heard me talking about MediShare, but now I give you my friend Sherry.
Yes, I have loved MediShare. Loved it.
Is that all you have to say? Because this will be really short.
No, I really do love it. I've saved hundreds a month. And overall, I just think it's a better choice of a healthcare program for me. I'm really happy with it. And honestly, normally, I don't even like talking about this stuff.
Nobody does.
But MediShare is different. MediShare members share each other's healthcare bills. We pray for each other. It's a not-for-profit, so we all save money.
True. Tell them about the thing.
What thing?
The online thing.
Oh, yeah, I used that the other night. MediShare members can now access a doctor online 24/7. You can get a prescription for the flu or something just that fast.
So MediShare can save you hundreds a month. You get to be part of the community. You get a huge network of doctors and providers to choose from.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
The final verdict from Jerry. So call 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE. 833-39-BIBLE.
The NTSB is investigating a helicopter that went down in Manhattan's East River yesterday, killing 5 passengers. Now, the pilot is heard on a radio transmission saying, "Mayday, mayday," and they believe he had an engine failure. NYPD's Daniel Negro has more from the scene.
There were 6 people on the helicopter. The pilot freed himself. The other 5 did not. So police and fire divers entered the water and removed the other 5.
A big race is happening tomorrow for a congressional seat in Pennsylvania. USA Radio Network's Wendy King explains.
Just after President Trump campaigned for Republican congressional candidate Rick Saccone, Democratic rival Connor Lamb was recruiting votes in Pennsylvania's coal country.
I'm proud to support the American Miners Pension Act because I believe that we have to keep our promises as a people.
The special election on Tuesday is seen as a key test of support for the president ahead of November's midterm elections.
This is USA Radio News.
At Robert Half, we know finding the right employees is a job in itself, and it's a job we love. You see, Robert Half isn't just a staffing firm. We're people. People who believe in finding the right people to fit your company's needs. Because employees who are a good fit are more productive, more engaged. Finding a great candidate isn't easy. But at Robert Half, we know it's possible. Robert Half, the experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
Police in Austin, Texas are investigating two separate package explosions that left at least one teenager dead and three others injured. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
This morning's package explosions occurred about 5 hours apart in two East Austin neighborhoods. The first explosion left a 17-year-old man dead and a woman rushed to the hospital with life-threatening injuries. Interim Austin Police Chief Brian Manley spoke to the media shortly after the first explosion.
We still are trying to work to understand what happened, what the device was, and where it came from.
Another package explosion was reported shortly before noon that sent an elderly woman to the hospital. I'm John Clemens.
A study finds most American women near retirement age haven't saved enough. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has more on the story.
Research from George Washington University finds women are more financially at risk today than they were a generation ago. The reasons? High levels of debt and low savings levels. Transamerica says the median retirement savings balance among working women is $34,000. They say many women approaching retirement don't have that much or anywhere near as much of a nest egg as they'll need. What can be done if you're near retirement and you're a woman? Well, the experts say you might have to work past retirement. In the meantime, also lower your living costs and boost your savings.
And finally, the Monday after daylight savings time begins is officially known as National Napping Day. For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
He was working through college on my grandpa's farm. I was thirsting for knowledge, and he had a car.
And we're back in the studio, and I am with Dan Gilligan, the state director from the Convention of States. We were just talking about, well, we were talking a lot when the news was on here, but now we're back in the studio and talking a little bit about the 12 states.
Yes.
Maybe you could fill everyone in on what has happened. We need 34.
Right.
Or you need 34.
Yes.
Or three-fourths, is that
That's
right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, good. Yep. Okay, of the states to ratify the convention. And so far as of 2018, what I pulled up from the website was that there were 12 states that had ratified. So right. My question was, is there a time limit on that? So if a state has done that, is it something that remains in effect?
There's really, as a general rule, no shelf life on this stuff. Article 5 groups similar to ours, you know, moving forward with the same concept, have been tried more than 400 times since the founding of the country. And none of them have ever gotten done. You know, as I, based on what I described before, it really is an appropriately high bar to succeed at what it is that we're attempting to do. But, you know, once a state passes that resolution, as a general rule, it hangs around. And there's no deadline on that. It can take as long or as short a period as you want to get the 34. And there are, in fact, other Article 5 groups who have their resolution, you know, just kind of sitting around. And, you know, the group loses energy or times change. And, you know, the issue that they were all about is no longer one that, you know, has any strength behind it. But we're constantly moving forward. And hopefully we'll see a lot more states pass the resolution in 2018.
And I know that there are different groups that are working on the Convention of States. Is this part of the Citizens for Self-Governance?
We're a project of Citizens for Self-Governance.
Okay. And so those remain with the three main things: reducing the federal government's authority over the state, trying to have some fiscal restraint in D.C., the federal budget, And then the question of term limits on federal officials.
Right. Our three application items, we seek to have a convention of states at which the states can consider ways in which we can reduce federal spending. And it's not really stated as reducing federal power over the states, but we just want to talk about ways in which we can reduce federal power and jurisdiction. And then the last is consideration of term limits.
Okay. And you believe that these things, you're not really offering any real solutions. You feel that having this convention of states, this is where the solutions would be brought forth?
Yeah. I really think that we're going about that in the right way, because there is a myriad of potential solutions to these problems. And you may like one, and I may like another, and we can sit here and argue about these things and never actually put together a convention of states. There are people who have written books about what these potential amendments reflecting one or all of those application items should be that get discussed at the convention. And, you know, I'm happy to let that process unfold and allow for those specific proposals to be put forth at a convention of states. I think that's probably the hard part, you know, although it seems like we're, you know, and I know the volunteers in New Jersey will agree that we're working pretty hard right now, but I think that we have the easy job of just getting everybody to say, hey, look, you know, I think that we can agree that these problems that we're talking about at the federal level are pretty important and need to be addressed. And guess what? We found a way to address them. Can we all agree on that? Please. I think we can. And that's why, you know, in 4 years, we've had 12 states agree with that so far. We're growing and doing well in New Jersey, hoping to get New Jersey to be one of those 34 states.
Well, one of the questions someone posed on our Facebook page earlier this morning was, who is funding the Convention of States? So I did go on the IRS website, and I was able to pull, you know, obviously it's not up to date. I think it was 2013, and there aren't disclosures there. So I guess the question is, well, I guess legally you're not required to disclose donors' identities, so it is, you know, totally acceptable practice. So I'm certainly supportive of being able to follow the law, which you are. Your group is doing that. I guess the question is, if we are shining a spotlight on the federal government, is there a reason, do you know, that the sources of funding aren't disclosed in the, and I could only look at 2011 and 2013.
Well, I'll tell you that we're an all-volunteer group, and we're, I guess, reasonably well-funded. I have had this question posed to us, and there are people who stand up and say, you guys are funded by the Koch brothers, and I don't like the Koch brothers. And, okay, I don't know the Koch brothers, but the individual who is the co-founder of Convention of States is a gentleman named Mark Meckler. And I've had the opportunity to meet Mark, and, you know, this question was posed to him, and, you know, he said, no, we definitely don't have the Koch brothers. We do have a lot of small donors. If there are big money people behind this, I don't know who they are, you know. But I, knowing a little bit about the finances of the organization and having to put my vouchers in for certain expenses, I don't think we got a ton of money. We got a ton of popularity, but the dollar signs, I don't think they're massive.
Well, I can say that your group is gaining popularity in terms of donors, number of donors, and how much money is coming in, which is probably a sign of support that you see, you know, funding increase when people start to learn more and have more of a sense of what the organization is doing. And so if people want to support that, they certainly, you would expect that your contributions would grow. And it is not, as you said, it is not a trillion-dollar organization. It's a very modest budget. I think it was about $6 million last year, which for a nationwide activist group is a very low budget. If
Right.
we looked at other groups that lobby and do those things. I think that what people want to know is that this isn't you know, one person driving this. And I think they also want to know that there's no one, you know, sort of picking on this group, because I believe that there are, you know, there is always the potential when there is not rhetoric, but there is some arguments that go on that are based in logic and that are gaining popularity. Sometimes people that are in power, you know, and don't want there to be change, they push forward and put their own ideas in front almost as a barricade. So we don't get to have conversations, and we don't get to ask questions that maybe are uncomfortable, but they allow us to talk.
Well, you know, I guess I'll interesting comment, and I'll mention a couple of things. I don't really worry about the funding for our group, and we are not, you know, I think pushing a particular agenda, because we have not moved forward again and said, look, you know, this is the thing you have to do that our group is really behind, and you know, that's what we want. We're in a different way. Really, what we're just saying is, we see these problems, and we'd like the states to get together in this legitimate, constitutionally prescribed way, get together to talk about, have a meeting about ways in which we can potentially, you know, address these things. So it's really hard, you know, I think, to be against us. And, you know, as far as money goes, we have a lot of passionate people. And I always like that quote, you know, never underestimate a small group of passionate people's ability to change the world. It's the only thing that ever did. And our volunteers in New Jersey are great. You know, they're committed, they're, you know, energetic, and they're energetic because, you know, they believe this, not because of money or, you know, self-benefit. You know, we actually feel honored that we're able to participate in doing something that we think really has the potential to help our country. Now, are there people who are against us? Yeah, absolutely. And there are groups who've been, you know, given money and charged with trying to suppress what it is that we're attempting to do. And I really, you know, that's like not part of my purview as the, you know, as a local volunteer leader in New Jersey to worry about that. Our guys at National worry about that. You know, I just try to build up the grassroots. If people have a reason why they don't like us, I mean, I think about that a little bit, but no matter how big the waves are in New Jersey, we're just going to keep rowing our boat as fast as we can, myself and all the other volunteers. But we certainly do have, you know, people who are not in favor of what we're doing for all different reasons, which, you know, I'm not really, we can get into that a little bit, but yeah.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. And I think for sure it works for you and against you, that your group, that you have some main areas that you know that there is some discord, and yet you want to be open to solutions, but there's no concrete solution because you think it's about being able to talk openly and communicate, which is a great problem-solving method and form of communication. I have to get on track with some commercials, but we'll be back here in the studio. Stay with us.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We could do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home sweet home.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
And we're back in the studio with Dan Gilligan from the Convention of States, and you can reach him at dan.gilligan@COS.com. And I'll put that over on our Facebook page. He has been kind enough to let me ask my questions today, first from some of our Facebook questions that we had earlier this morning when we posted that Dan would be in the studio with us today, and now he's letting me ask my question. So maybe I am more cynical than the average person here, but I have to ask, what makes anyone think that the state government would do any better and have more fiscal restraints and constraints than the federal government?
Well, and I know we talked before, and I said, go ahead, Georgine, ask me that question. And I'm not really going to answer that directly. And the reason why I'm not is because our three application items talk about restricting federal spending, talk about restricting federal power and jurisdiction. We don't necessarily say we want to make the state stronger. That may, in fact, be something of a byproduct of proposed amendments. But we're just saying, look, you know, you have when you have a federal government that has taken so much authority, you know, the 400 federal agencies, all of the regulatory information that flows down, we have, in fact, you know, really weakened the states. Weakened the states because they do not get to make the kinds of decisions that they may, that we may prefer that they make at a local level, because they are burdened with so much law and regulation that flows down, you know, to the point where some people have described the states these days as really administrative functionaries of the federal government. And although, you know, you have a point, hey, the states aren't really, you know, operating in a perfect manner either, you know, there is that notion that I think, you know, that Roman political notion that, you know, power best serves those to whom it is closest. So although I think there may be some room for some, you know, for some lack of complete confidence in the state's ability to govern, I would tend to have greater faith in them than I would in a faraway federal government. You know, you look at the federal government, and you know, we send the money there, and then if the states behave in the right way, maybe they get some of that back. And in New Jersey, that's a, you know, New Jersey's a donor state. You know, you look at the numbers, they're all over the place. But basically, you know, the one that seems that people generally agree on is for every dollar that goes to New Jersey, about 50 cents of that comes back. So, you know, I think that's a system that, you know, has a lot of certainly mistakes in it, corruption in it. And of course, waste. You know, you look at the you look at the country and the five wealthiest counties in the country. You know, they're not in Manhattan where guys are having IPOs, or where, you know, in California where guys are making iPads and stuff like that. They're the five suburbs of Virginia and Maryland surrounding D.C. And that's because we send money there so that people can, you know, make make decisions and set regulation, and then hopefully we'll get some of that money back.
Well, having a background that's worked with federal and state funding, it is interesting to know that there are some funding sources, it's federal funds, but the funds get passed through to the state, and every place it stops, everyone has an administrative allowance to take and rules to follow. And that seems like if we're leaving administrative dollars at the federal level and then we're leaving administrative dollars at the state level, that that's less dollars we're getting to the people who really need the service. Would this change any of that?
Well, I would hope so, Georgine, because I think you're describing what we, the type of activity that we would like to bring some help to, relief to, correction to, whereby basically we're, you know, us as taxpayers, we send money to the federal government, and then people in all types of organizations, some in nonprofits, say, well, geez, I'm going to put together my grant application and maybe I can get some of that federal tax money. Well, wouldn't it be easier to go around the corner to the people who sent the money to the federal government and say, hey, we need help locally?
You would think
so. Because you're right. Everybody, you know, as that money moves farther up the chain, you know, we're all people and somebody gets paid for that transaction, you know, even though they may not have added a lot of value to that. So, you know, I reflect back on, you know, why Article 5 is in the Constitution. And the reason is because those guys said, look, you know, we're going to have these people working in the federal government. We're creating this federal government. We're doing a great job. But you know what? When people have power, you know what they want? They want more power. So it doesn't make them bad people. It just kind of makes them human. And that's what's happened. And, you know, there is a mechanism that was expected to kind of check that so that it didn't get to be as big and, you know, as big as it is.
Well, Dan, maybe that's why we have the quote, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Well, I think when look at this, Georgine, what is it that restricts the federal government? What is it that restricts the federal government from having absolute power? Well, there's really nothing. You know, just think if you had a Congress and the president had no ability to veto, you know, how would the country look? Or if you had a House of Representatives where the Senate took up and allowed for everything that the House wanted to bring up and did nothing. You know, where would we be? What would those bodies be? Would they have absolute power? Well, yeah, arguably. And where would the country be? Well, what if you had a federal government that was able to basically, you know, do what it wanted with no check, with no restriction, with no, you know, no counter to that? I wonder where the country would be. Well, the country's where it is. And that's why, and people, you know, who get exposed to the Convention of States Project, they look at that. And even though they may not articulate it like that, they kind of know that. And when they learn about what it is that we're doing and the part of the Constitution that we're following, they're very, you know, really very excited to be part of what we're doing.
Dan, thank you for joining us here at Houghton Hunterdon to talk about the Convention of States. I will get your card up on our Facebook page so people can contact you. And I did look up the 12 states that have passed the
resolution.
The resolution, and they were neither all Republican nor were they all Democratic states, neither blue or red, I guess is what you'd say. So it looks like there's some agreement on both sides that this may be something that we want to talk about.
I don't see anything that has more of the potential to actually be bipartisan.
Well, thank you, Dan, again for joining us. And we always like to have our guests in the studio. We have a Rewinds coming up for Ruth Ann Brown Celebration Hour. And then next week, I think we have a brand new show coming on right after next week's Houghton Hunterdon. Stay with us.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
A package bomb that killed a teenager and wounded a woman today in Austin, Texas, is probably linked to a similar bombing that killed a man elsewhere in the city earlier this month. That's according to authorities. Brett Manley is the Austin, Texas police chief. He says what you should do if you have a suspicious package left outside your door.
Under no circumstance should you touch them, move them, or handle them in any way, but instead make that call, and then if you can exit your residence or go to the back of the residence until that time that we can get there and deem that safe.
The first test flights to Mars could be ready as soon as the first half of next year. That's according to Tesla and SpaceX founder Elon Musk. Although Musk also told a South by Southwest audience, you better be careful if you're on one of those first flights.
It'll be far more dangerous, difficult, dangerous, good chance you'll die.
This is USA Radio News.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. I actually don't even think about food. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400